It's Saturday night in comedy, and tonight we sit down with two absolute heavy hitters straight out of NYC. We are back in the New York groove with two headliners from the world's most infamous comedy mecca. Kicking off with the man of many voices, Matt Friend. I mean, he's 23, so he's at least the boy of many voices, but he can pretty much nail anyone in comedy. And we go one-on-one with club favorite Paul Virzi, who's making his way right here to the six. I'm Dean Young. And we're about to go inside the joke.
Welcome to Inside Jokes on Global News Radio 640 Toronto.
And baby, you better believe I'm back.
Saturday. There we go. I can do a new song now that's even more terrible than it used to be. It is Saturday night in comedy, and you are, of course, listening to an all-new Inside Jokes right here on 640 Toronto. And as always, streaming all over planet Earth, wherever there is Tay Internets, courtesy of our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical, helping you hail a cab without getting hit by it. How about that? The reason I say that is because it is very New York tonight. We are in the New York groove. We are talking New York comedy. I got Vince Tedesco, our producer, on the air. How are you doing, buddy?
Doing well. Yes, a very New York City vibe. New York.
It is a very New York vibe.
Let's go to a Broadway show.
Which we can. Yeah, that's right. We can relate to that in Toronto comedy. As Alec Baldwin once said on 30 Rock, Toronto is basically just New York without all the things.
Yes.
But of course, you know, New York is kind of, it's a stand-up mecca. It's sort of the city, you know, the land of all these like cult famous intimate comedy clubs that Toronto for a lot of part. I mean, we've certainly have spots in this city that we've sort of patterned themselves off of them. But tonight we're talking to two very different, very unique, very specific New York comics. First up in the show, we're going to go one-on-one with Matt Friend, who at the tender age of 23 has captured some of the most infamous and famous and even bizarre character voices in comedy and entertainment. He can do just about anybody. And courtesy of that, it's landed him an insane amount of TikTok followers. He's been everywhere from Howard Stern to late shows. He's all over the place.
He's at the Golden Globes.
He's done Stern for sure. We're going to ask him about that. And then later on in the show, we have Paul Virzi, who a lot of podcasters know him. He hosts two very famous podcasts and, of course, co-hosts and frequently tours with Bill Burr. But he's all over the place, not just clubs in New York. He's literally all over the map touring. And he is coming right here to Toronto later this month. He'll be here in the six. So we got Matt Friend. We got Paul Virzi. It is a very New York groove right here, right now on Inside Jokes. Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and as of course, streaming everywhere on planet Earth on Global News Online, brought to you as always by our good friends at Hakeem Optical. Frames that look so good, they'll have everyone saying, damn, Daniel, that is a thing that isn't trending anymore, and probably five people will remember. We are, of course, talking all things New York. We are in the New York groove tonight on Inside Jokes. First up, we are chatting with the man of many voices, Matt Friend. At the tender age of 23, this comic has already gained infamy, not to mention multiple late show appearances and a massive online following with his uncanny ability to mimic some of comedy and acting's most bizarre personalities. I mean, you, Matt, first off, we thank you. We know you're a New Yorker. That is the scene you came up in, but you're actually out in LA right now. So you woke up insanely early to do Canadian radio for like two dozen people. That is dedication right there. You think you're blowing up now and you're doing Stern and all this? Wait till after you do some Canadian radio. You have just paved a road of gold for yourself, my friend.
You know what? We love Canada, beautiful people, and I got to be myself. Now, listen, I'm happy. Thanks for having me. It's great to be here.
And of course, you know, we're on the air here in Toronto, which for you as a New Yorker, well, it's New York light. Or fat-free Chicago. That's another thing we could probably call
it. I'm from Chicago, so that's a good one, actually.
There you go. So this city is that, but just, you know, watered down a little bit. But anyways, it's kind of funny because you are very reflective of really what's happening in comedy right now. Because there was a time pre-Pandy, because on this show we've been calling it the Pandy, because, you know, let's try and make that a little more fun. Let's put some sparkles on that. But there was a time not that long ago where everyone in comedy really sort of thumbed their noses at anything online. And we started seeing festivals booking, you know, YouTubers to do these gala shows and all this because it was sort of all about numbers. Like the festivals and and agents and bookers were starting to clue in the fact that, like, no, these are people who have themselves with their own hands built mass followings and, you know, audiences of millions wide. But a lot of people in comedy were really sort of old school about it, and they really thumbed their nose at it. But this is, like, you're very representative of the fact that you are a comic that came up doing exactly that. You built your own online audience, and now you built your own career. I mean, at the age of 23, your online following, it's landed you on Stern. It's landed you on Late Show.
24.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Careful there. You're almost one more year, and, you know, DiCaprio wouldn't be friends with you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're getting up there. But no, I mean, realistically, a lot of comics always went, no, that's ridiculous. Well, that's kind of changed the face of comedy. I mean, you built your own audience and here we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's, for me, I was doing comedy before I started posting on social media. I'm from Chicago. I grew up about 5 minutes away from Second City. I know we have the Canada-Chicago connection there. And I was always just very obsessed with comedy at a young age. I've talked about it in many interviews, but I watched Austin Powers, and that's Mike Myers. There you go. And that's like the first thing that mesmerized me as a kid. I was just completely hooked for whatever reason. I would look up like Johnny Carson and Ed Sullivan and Don Rickles and Rich Little, great Canadian, by the way, right there.
Wow, he's got a passport.
exactly. Yeah, I know my shit there. We love Canada. So very obsessed with that. And then when the pandemic hit, though, I needed some way to pivot. I mean, I was so used to doing stand-up and comedy clubs while I was in college at NYU. And then the pandemic hit, I needed some creative outlet. So then I started doing this online stuff, and that's what led to a lot of just crazy, like, agent manager finding me, like, you know, all these different appearances, being here with you guys in Canada right now. So I mean, it's pretty amazing. But a lot of the gatekeepers have been, I don't want to say entirely eliminated, but the idea that you had to be seen by someone at a club to have some level of success is kind of over. You can make something out of nothing by posting a video in your kitchen. So if you're still frowning upon the idea that you can, like if you're a comedian or that is frowned upon the idea that you can do something great in comedy by posting online, you're just wrong, because this is the way it's done now.
It is so true. I mean, it's kind of funny you talk about the gatekeepers. That's one thing we've been on a lot about on this show lately is, I mean, here in Canada, that's definitely what's happening. Because, I mean, it's a small industry. In this country, we have like two club chains, two corporate clubs. And
I thought you were going to say we have like two people. I was confused for a second.
We're talking to them right now.
I mean, and we have like a handful of clubs. And I mean, of course, the one that everybody all over the planet knows is, of course, Just for Laughs. That's the big one. But here in Canada, that's how it always worked. It was either land on, you know, these three festivals or you get signed by one of the clubs. Yeah. And that was the only way in. And now it's like completely blown up. It's kind of funny too. I mean, speaking of, you know, you did get to go on Stern, and of course you did.
It just talked about me like an hour ago. Apparently I have to listen to it.
And it's funny because you actually got a chance to do Stern for Stern, but it's kind of funny because that is another thing that is changing comedy, because not that long ago, Stern was the place, that was the spot in radio where comics would sort of generate infamy for themselves, because they would go on there and they could generate a bit of edge and controversy and buzz. And it was a show that everyone listened to and everybody talked about. It was sort of like a newer version of, you know, back in the day, if comics got called over to like the Late Show couch, that meant they were going to blow up.
Yeah.
Stern kind of became the later on version of that in a way. And I mean, yes, of course, he's still going and he's still very much out there and relevant. But in a way, that is a bygone era now too, because everything's all about podcasting and digital content and getting your voice out there in a different way. So it's another one of those paths that you don't necessarily need to do anymore. This whole sort of like shock radio era is almost gone as well.
He's just such like an icon though. It's like,
he's a media empire now.
The way I compared it to was like, kind of like what you just said, but, and I said this to him on the air, but like getting his approval felt like when Carson would do the nod to a young comedian. It's very good. You're a very talented comedian. So that's the impression I do to get women my age to be attracted to me. I do my Johnny Carson impression. That's what, that's what they love. Yeah. But that's what they care about. But I mean, he just being on with him is just like the coolest. And I think it's a fun match too, because like I'm young and I'm coming up and doing like TikTok and social media, and he's obviously the most established you can possibly be in the entertainment industry now. So, I mean, he's just the best.
Well, he really is a one-man media empire. And it's kind of funny because it's like, you know, yeah, you can make it as a comic now without doing the late shows or without doing Stern.
100%, absolutely.
It's still a massive feather in your cap. It's still a massive...
It's just platform. Very cool. It's very cool. Yeah, it's amazing.
So it's, you know, that definitely that buzz hasn't gone. All right, we got lots more to get into with Matt Friend, the man of many voices, out in LA by way of NYC. We'll be right back right here with more Inside Jokes.
Oh my golly. Hello, hello. Yes, of course. Yes, yes, yes. You're listening to Inside. Yes, Inside Jokes. I love a good joke. Love a good riddle. I'm a riddler. Yes, of course. You're listening to Inside Jokes. Fantastic radio program. Makes me think of the vaudevillian era. Yeah, vaudeville. Of course, Vaughn. Yes, in Jurassic Park, scary in the dark. Yes. Thank you very much.
You got a friend in me. Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and as always, streaming all over the universe on Global News Online, brought to you as always by our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical, because the planet is getting hotter, and so are your selfies. We are talking all things New York comedy. We are talking to the one and only man of many voices. Matt Friend is on the air with us right now, which, by the way, Matt, like, you know, you built this following. You blew up because of your uncanny ability to mimic so many voices. And of course, you know, you have some very infamous voices in comedy. You've done impressions of other comics. I know you've done Maniscalco for him so many times. You've done Stern for Stern. Yeah. One interesting one is Jeff Goldblum, because to me, he's that level of sort of eccentric cult character. He's almost like a Christopher Walken level at this point, except...
Yes.
Not a lot of people, like, even though there's so much mannerisms to grab onto there, not a lot of people have really mastered that voice. Oh my God, you certainly have. I mean, you gave us a promo for the show as Goldblum. It's funny, everyone and their dog does a Christopher Walken. Like, you know,
yeah.
At kitchen parties, people are doing Christopher Walken, but really mastered the Goldblum, which
that's
an eccentric one.
Well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, he is like the greatest gift for like a comedian or impressionist. He's unbelievable. I mean, and in terms of just like how he behaves in interviews and everything, like he's like this creature that is just the greatest. And I've had the most fun with that impression too. And him loving it as well. And when I was on stage with him last year, like it was just insane. And then I just played him on The Simpsons too, which was just kind of crazy. So getting a lot of mileage out of Daddy Jeff Goldblum,
And well, it's funny too, because as you mentioned, like he is such a walking caricature of himself, and he just kind of gets better with age. He keeps on getting blossoming more and more.
He's like 70 years old. It's amazing, remarkable.
But for you, as a comic and as an impersonator, I mean, there's just so much. There's so much richness to grab onto there.
There is. There's the way his voice fluctuates. It's amazing. Yeah. There's so many different like ingredients that go into Jeff Goldblum.
You have some characters that you have some people that you can absolutely nail that are some pretty bold choices and are some pretty like Timothy Chalamet is one that I know you've become known for. To me, Timothy Chalamet. And I mean, of course, that's obviously that's a big name right now, especially for a lot of your audience. But like, when I heard that, I was like, how did he, like, I would have thought there's not really anything to latch on to there, but you've somehow shocked that one open. I don't know how you, like, Chalamet is one that you've absolutely mastered.
Well, you just have to sort of, like, get really small and be very, very humble, start laughing. It's just so surreal to be here with you guys.
I'm such a big fan of Canada. It's so great to be here. Just like be very, very nervous. Yeah, that's a fun one. And I'm having a lot of fun now with Austin Butler, too. That's a big one. He's having a huge moment right now.
He's having a moment
in Hollywood.
Now.
Yeah.
Well, he's thrown his voice, hasn't he? He's been talking like Elvis for months now.
It's wild. Yeah, he's just like, he did an amazing job playing Austin, but he's still playing Elvis, rather. Playing Austin, yeah, exactly. But he still sounds like Elvis, which is amazing. So just like he wins the Golden Globe and he's just like, hey, thank you so much. It's such an honor to have won this thing. And then I'm like, is he going to start singing next? Just like, if I can dream of a better land where all my brothers go hand in hand, tell me why. I'm like, dude, it's okay. We know you're from Southern California. What's happening? So it was amazing.
It's like
he met him too, actually, which was awesome. Yeah.
It's funny because, like you said, it's like he refused to get out of character. Another one that you've really nailed, which she's also having a massive moment right now, is Jennifer Coolidge. Like, she's
obviously not the age thing, but
she's kind of having like a Betty White moment right now. She's just sort of like
Coolidge, comedy. Coolidge and Goldblum. I'm like, we need to get a rom-com starring Goldblum and Coolidge. Like, that would be the craziest. My head would explode, probably. Imagine
I love that,
that
title, Goldblum and Coolidge. That's
well, there you go. I mean, yeah. Have you ever had the chance to do it for her, by the way? Because I know most of the comics have seen it, you know?
No, but now I'm going to sound like such a, like, I can't even believe, like, the words that are about to come out of my mouth. That I'm actually, when I was at the Golden Globes after party last week, I met her. which is just wild to say. But I didn't do my impression, but I did meet her, which was very cool.
One thing I was curious about, and of course, as you mentioned, like, you're Chicago born and raised. You came up in Chicago. You came up in New York.
Yeah.
Doing comedy. Obviously, as you said, I mean, you have a TikTok is a huge platform for you. You have a massive following there. You know, you really did sort of blow up online. You launched your career there. But of course, you also came up on stage. For you, I mean, Chicago is sort of the land of sketch and improv. New York is the stand-up mecca. So, I mean, so much of your audience is online. But for you on stage, when you're doing this live, is there a certain club that for you was really sort of your home stage where you cut your teeth, where you sort of felt most at home?
You know, it's happening now. And that's what it's fun doing this interview. Because I just did my first tight end full hour of stand up for the New York Comedy Festival, this big festival in New York. And I'm all over the city. Like, the first club I started out really performing at consistently was the Comic Strip, where like Seinfeld started. And Eddie Murphy, and then Gotham Comedy Club. But where I'm really working now is the Stand Comedy Club, is where those guys are the greatest.
Yeah,
and that's where I feel I'm becoming a comedian right now. I'm there like all the time and working on my jokes and crowd work and everything. So that is my place.
How much are those? Because I mean, I know obviously you're not always in character. Like, you as a comic, you're writing and performing from the chest as well, from your own life.
Yes, that's right.
Sort of separate are those two sides of you? Like, have you ever had to be up on stage and dismantle a heckler while in character?
Well, it's funny you ask. Normally, I will dismantle them as myself. However, but I will say, I had a joke about this, actually, which is that Trump is the ideal voice to do when you're being heckled, because if you say something mean to me, I can say something much worse in that voice. Because if you're Trump, you can say whatever you want. So, for example, if you tell me you suck during a comedy show, someone goes, oh, you suck. I can just be like, and you're a dog. Lock him up, folks. Lock him up like a dog. He's a nasty guy, right? So that's the way to shut someone up immediately. But that is a fun one. But in terms of the comedy, there's a lot of regular stand-up in there, too, that I'm excited to be sharing out these next few weeks and months ahead.
Well, and it's kind of funny too, because for you, you're sort of a dual threat. Like, for you as a stand-up, and also the flip side where you're slipping into character and you're an impersonator.
Yeah.
There's sort of this inception thing happening there, because every stand-up, when they get up on stage, you're sort of slipping into, you know, a sort of an extreme version of yourself. You're sort of slipping into a persona in a way. So it's sort of, you're going behind the curtain. So for you, it's like, you're already doing that as a stand-up. You're already, you know, going into like a dialed up version of yourself to begin with. And then there's like, further layers back when you slip into more characters. So it's like, you're really, you have a lot of walls you can put up there in those situations.
Absolutely.
Where do you feel most at home right now? I mean, like you say, you're working the stand a lot. You are out there, you're working touring stand-up. That is half of why you make these appearances as well. Where do you feel most at home and sort of alive and in the moment? Is it when you are live on stage, or is it when you are pumping out content for your online following? Because those are sort of two dual worlds for you.
You know, I what's interesting is I'm in both of these worlds where I'm a stand-up comedian. I'm doing stand-up in the clubs, and then I'm also kind of in this like influencer social media space, 24 treading both worlds, and I wouldn't have it any other way. Like, I really like seeing both of these worlds and merging them together. But in terms of where you feel most at home, that's just on stage. I mean, I like when I'm doing my material in front of people, like that is where the best stuff happens, I think. But I mean, also like doing interviews and having crazy stuff happen, I mean, is really exciting for me as well. Like being on different, like Stern, and then doing like voiceover and other things. And so I don't know, it's a very exciting time. There's a lot coming up.
Now, Matt, I saw you on the Golden Globes, and obviously you're doing interviews and connecting impersonations as well. How much of that is on the fly, and how long does it actually take for you to master an impression? Like, are you looking at pitch, tone, cadence, like all that comes into play?
It, you know, that's a great question. It, you know, sometimes everybody's like, so what's your process? And like, I have no f-ing idea. It's like Don Rickles said that comedy is a personality. And I relate a lot to that in terms of like, it is very much just within me. You know, my sister called me a glorified parrot. So that's maybe that is what I am. But usually I'm such a like fan of pop culture, and I'm very into what's happening like politically in the news. And so like, I'm just kind of aware of what's going on. And usually with that, like I just figure out impressions. Sometimes I want to get someone down quickly, like Paul Dano. I have to work on him still, but I met him and he actually said to me after, he goes, that was really good. So I made him laugh with like a line of his, but some I need to get down quicker, but usually it just kind of happens.
I guess it's kind of a challenge in a way, right? For you to like, okay, I can tackle this one. I can tackle this one. But I mean, realistically, I mean, obviously this is just inherently in you, but I mean, when you first started tinkering around and putting this stuff out online, did you in your wildest dreams imagine that's where it would land? You would be on Stern, would be at the Golden Globes, would be on late night talk shows. Did you ever imagine
it's
that?
Like, it's so, I mean, especially like this quickly, I think it's relatively fast. I don't know if the pandemic did not happen. I'm not, I mean, I would have been doing comedy. I don't know if all this stuff would have happened as fast necessarily, because in some ways, like all this social media stuff accelerated things getting seen by people. But I mean, I always had goals and was visualizing things. But there's certainly some pinch me moment that doesn't even make sense. Like when I was at the Globes, I'm like, how is this even possible? I feel like I broke in here. So it was just unbelievable.
That's crazy, man. That's crazy. For you though, do you sort of have a favorite
impression?
Yeah.
There must be one that's sort of closest to the chest for you at this point.
Yeah, which one do you love doing? I mean,
you know, I oddly enough, I love doing Tim Cook, the CEO of Apple, for some reason. Like, good morning. It's so great to be here today. Thank you so much. We've got an incredible update to our iPhone program. I don't know. Something about the Apple keynotes puts me in a great mood. But I like the Stern and Goldblum, I love doing. And then like obscure ones like Chuck Grassley, for some weird reason, this like very obscure politician in the United States. So who else is fun? I mean,
can you do any Canadians? Can you do a Trudeau?
You know, I should have prepared more for that. I got to hear it. I know if I do it, what's going to happen is you guys get to say like, there's going to be some picky. I got to come back and I'll have to get him down.
Okay, it's fine. Okay. Anyways, Matt, all of our famous people live in LA where you are right now. Anyways, they don't actually live here anymore.
Hey, look, I saw Seth Rogen at the Golden Globe. So that's another
there we go.
Yeah.
There's a lot to grab onto there with that guy. Matt, we get on.
And I saw Bieber last night at a restaurant. I didn't say hi to him, but I saw him.
Oh, there hey, Justin Bieber, right on. There's another one to tell. Might nail them all.
There you go. Rogan's one with a lot to grab onto. Matt, thank you so much, by the way. I know you're joining us on West Coast time from out in LA. Before we do let you go, though, for our listeners at home, where can we follow you on TikTok? Where can we find you online? Check out upcoming shows, all that good stuff.
At Real Donald Trump. No, I'm kidding. It is at The Matt Friend on Instagram. TheMattFriend. The Matt Friend. Instagram, TikTok, Twitter, and Snapchat.
There we go. Love it. Matt, thank you so much, man. I mean, it's, again, so this repertoire is absolutely insane, but also for our listeners at home, check out Matt's stand-up as well. He's a man of many talents, a man of many voices. Matt Friend, thank you so much for joining us today, man.
thank you for having me. Great to meet you guys.
Hello, excuse me, stop talking. Okay, hello, everybody. This is the Donald John Trump, and I'll tell you what. There's a great show. We love it. It's called Inside Jokes. We love to get inside because when you're a star, they let you do it. You can do anything. Grab them. I'm not going to say the sentence, but you know what I'm talking about. China. Thank you very much, honey. Thank you.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto. And of course, as always, streaming coast to coast, North America wide, planet Earth wide, everywhere where there's the internet. On Global News Online, brought to you as always by our lovely friends at Hakeem Optical, because you can't troll Twitter comments that you can't read. How about that? We are, of course, talking all things New York comedy. Thank you again to Matt Friend for joining us early in the show. Now we're switching back to the NYC. We've got the one and only Paul Bearsey on the air with us right now. No stranger to clubgoers, literally all over the continent. In fact, all over the planet at this point. One of the hardest working comics out of NYC, I really think. Host of two hit podcasts, of course, The Bearsey Effect, and also your co-host with Bill Burr. So, I mean, that's another huge audience for you, which is kind of funny because we were talking a lot about that with Matt, is just podcasting and sort of building this digital audience was a thing that really changed the game a lot, especially during, I'm calling it the pandy, by the way, Paul, just we got to make that sound more fun if we can. But of course, no stranger to audiences there. Paul, thank you for joining us today, man.
Oh, thank you for having me, man. I'm glad you guys are back up and running as of last week or a couple days ago.
I'm going to spend the first 20 minutes of the show just listing off your credits, basically. But, you know.
Yeah, I appreciate it, man. It's good to be here with you guys.
And, of course, I mean, and for our audiences, you're coming up here to Toronto. You're coming up here to the 6th, January 28th. You'll be live here in Toronto. So we're all looking forward to that, of course. It's kind of funny, though. One thing I want to ask you, I mean, you come out of the New York scene. New York is really, it really is the stand-up mecca. I mean, New York is famous for those cult comedy clubs, those intimate rooms, cutthroat audiences a lot of the time. So, I mean, going from that, going to sort of like those heritage clubs and cutting your teeth in those rooms, very New York style. It's a diehard stand-up town. But then you're going to, you're literally performing on stages like Madison Square Garden and Carnegie Hall. How much of a different animal is that, man? Coming from these intimate, famous New York clubs to just now you're in these selling out these mega theaters. It's such a crazy swing.
Well, if you know, listen, I was very lucky early on to have some big comedians that I had opened for, like Bill Burr. I opened for years, on and off. I mean, he was West Coast, so I didn't open for him as much as some people think. It was just when he was doing a run and he wanted me on there. But to be in some of those rooms was amazing. And then now to be headlining myself. Yeah, I think New York definitely, but I will say this, New York definitely is, I think, when it's thriving is the best. And I think it really makes you as more honest and the fans really make you better and push you to be better, especially the lineups with the comedians. Everything in New York, especially on weekends, you feel like you're on a JFL lineup every time you go and just do a regular spot. But I will say that funny is funny. So, you know, I see comics that aren't from New York come to New York and they're all nervous about New York. And I'm just like, guys, doesn't matter, man. These are people. Like, just go and do what you do. No, don't let the New York thing change anything. Funny is funny. Yeah, you gotta want to be keep getting your reps. But I think New York, the reason why New York makes you better is because of also the reps and the opportunity. Yeah. So if you had an opportunity to get up all the time in Toronto, you know, if you're in Toronto and you have The Stand, The Comedy Cellar, New York Comedy Club, Gotham. This, if you have all of those clubs going and you're really in it, you're going to be rotating and get better anyway. So as much as I love New York, and I do think it's the best, especially when the city's thriving and coming back like it is now after COVID, I think it's more of just the comedian. And I think a lot of that is noise, like playing, oh my God, you're going to play here. And it's like, yeah, but I'm going to be me there. And hopefully that's enough, if that makes sense. So when I come to, I'm doing the Royal Theater out there. The Royal Theater and in Toronto on the 28th. And I'm just going to, you know, bring my new hour. And I know how great the fans in Canada are and have always shown me love. So I'm excited about it.
Well, I think that's why, like, even so many of our comics in Canada. And I mean, obviously, the big struggle for us up here is always just trying to build our own system here where we get to keep our performers at home. But the ones who do make the move stateside, it's the ones who are serious about stand up that make the move to New York, because New York is such a dyed in the wool true blue stand-up town. I mean, LA is where you go when you just want to be seen and you just want to make a name for yourself and you want work. New York is like, if you are dedicated to stand-up and being on stage in the club is what you, that is the city for that. It is so just in the bones in New York. It's such a stand-up scene.
I couldn't agree more, man. I couldn't agree more. Like me, like I was just, I did a podcast. I think it was on I was on Whitney Cummings' podcast in LA. And I said to Whitney, I go, I didn't get in this business initially to get rich and famous. And I didn't. I got in this business because it was such an honor to stand on a stage and do what Richard Pryor and Eddie Murphy did. Even once, I was just like, it was such baby steps for me because I knew that I had something with when I would talk to people, they felt it. So I was like, let me go on stage and try this. But I never was like, I'm going to do this and be a star. I never wanted that. I wanted to get better at this and then better. And then when I saw, oh man, things are going well, it's like, oh, now let's see how far this shit could go instead of having it be like, oh, I'm going to, as soon as I hit the stage, I never wanted it like that. It was more of like an honor to do it. And then now that things are going the way that they're going, it was like, okay, this is what I was meant to do. If that makes any sense.
Well, and in New York, you get a chance to sort of come up with and learn from the best of the best. I mean, you're going and doing the Cellar or somewhere, and it's like you're on the same lineup as these absolute giants who are there just dicking around and working out new material. And it's like, that's the people that you're coming up with and cutting your teeth with. Was there that comic for you, by the way? Because every comic sort of has that origin story where it's like, well, here's the comic who, you know, took me aside in the green room and sort of showed me the ropes or gave me feedback. I mean, we know, of course, you co-host Anything Better with Bill Burr, and, you know, you work the road, you work the clubs with Bill. Who was that comic for you who sort of coming up in those New York clubs sort of like commented on your sets and watched your material and gave you that feedback and sort of made you want to go further in this game?
Yeah, man. There were nights where you get like down or you realize the sacrifice. And I had two little kids at home and there were nights where you're like, man, I got little kids at home and I'm doing jokes in a dungy little bug. What am I doing? And then, and then all of a sudden, you know, somebody, you run into somebody. There's actually a couple. I remember there's a couple things that happened. I'm like, oh man, I remember one time I was doing a dive bar show, little, you know, shitty show and not many, you know, comics that I knew, but they got Judah Friedlander was on it at the time. And Judah had just done a Ben Stiller thing. And I remember, and I went to the bathroom after my set and I guess he watched and I was just at the urinal and he walked in and he goes, hey man, like that was like really good. And then I remember being on the road and having some bigger guys go, hey dude, like you got a future in this thing. Or I remember making a headliner work and I could see that they changed around me. And when they talked to me, and not in an arrogant, cocky way, but I knew that they saw potential in me. And then some would actually say it. And then, you know, obviously Bill Burr saying, you know, people hit me up going, man, Bill Burr just called you a beast. And I never really even knew that. Yeah. So like hearing things like that, I opened for Jim Brewer in Vegas and he was very complimentary. Those things keep you going, man. You're like, all right, maybe telling these dick jokes in a bar is going to pay off sometimes.
Everything's going to be all right.
There you go. It'll be all right. You're doing something right. All right. We're going to come back with more Paul Bearzy right here on Inside Jokes. And of course, do not miss him live. He will be here in Toronto at the Royal Theater January 28th. We're going to be back with more New York comedy right here on Inside Jokes.
What's up, guys? This is Paul Bearzy, and I am on Inside Jokes. I am thrilled that Canada is back up and running, and I'm coming there to bring my new hour. Let's go.
I want to be a part of it. New York, New York.
Welcome back to Inside Jokes, baby, right here on 640 Toronto, and of course, streaming all over the goddamn planet on Global News Online. Brought to you, as always, by our good friends at Hakeem Optical. New year, new look. Well, your eyesight stays forever 2020, which apparently so did Canada for the most part. How about that? We have Paul Bearzy on the air with us by way of New York, but of course he's coming live to Toronto. He'll be here January 28th at the Royal Theater in Toronto's Little Italy. Paul, it's kind of funny. We were talking to you before the break about, you know, when you first start out, you're coming up in those sort of infamous New York clubs and you're working alongside these absolute giants in comedy. For you, that must have been kind of a weird sort of dual life coming up too, because I mean, on one hand, yeah, you had young kids at home, you're a family man, you're a suburban New York guy, and then at nighttime, you sort of slip into the city and go into these comedy clubs and go into these dive bars and start telling jokes. Because comedy, it's such a weird lifestyle of a gig. It's such a weird thing to do with your life. Is there some sort of balance that you think that you have that maybe a lot of other comics don't, where it's like you do have this sort of peaceful, sane life, and then you're going into this dark underworld?
That's a great question and 100% true. And I remember comedians would come up to me and go, man, like, you kind of have this nice balance of both. And yeah, I mean, I have this life with my kids and I'm up here in the country and I got horses running around and deer and it's beautiful. And then I go into the city And I just, I'm around just, you know, mentally damaged, you know, just unbelievably wild people that are just, I mean, listen, a lot of people in this business are messed up and broken. Listen, I have my stuff, but you go there and now you're in a room of all these talented people. It's nighttime. Everybody like wants to go up and give their perspective on life and be funny. And I would do that. And it would be amazing. And then I would just get out of Dodge and be up in the country. And I think that that helped me because yeah. You feel the city, right? And you feel that it's alive and you're doing all those things and you're telling these jokes. But then to be sitting up in the woods afterwards, it made me go, oh, this is the life. This is the balance of life that that I wanted and quite frankly needed, because I couldn't be doing that life and live in Manhattan. I tried it for a while. I lived in Manhattan for a while. And it's just like it was a lot.
Was there one place that you never in a million years thought this is what telling jokes brought me to at this point?
In October, my New York Giants were playing the Packers in London.
Yeah.
And my agent was like, I think I can, you know, I was like, hey, man, I'd love to take my family to go see the Giants play the Packers. Is there a gig that we could get? And he's like, yeah, there's this one venue, you know, it's like, you know, it's hundreds of people. It's not huge, but it is hundreds of people. It's London. We'll see. And it sold out real quick. And we added one. And I remember the line to see me in London and then people in London going, we flew from Germany to see you. And I'm on stage and I'm in London, dude. I mean, look at me. I'm in London. And it's like, I look like this. I talk like this. And these people in London, England, are like roaring for me. And I'm on stage looking and my kids and wife got to see that. And I was just like, wow, man, like, you know, it's very humbling to be able to do something and have the appreciation reach that, you know, and here's the brutal thing though. I'll tell you guys a really cool story. I know it's, you guys are, I have time, whatever, but I'm in London and I think my show, so I'm like literally in this hotel, my kids are jumping on beds and she was like, it was like Home Alone, like with your family, right? It was incredible, right? And we're having a good time and I'm resting in bed because my show, the sold out show, the first one is I think it's going to happen at like, you know, 8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden I'm in bed at 6:45 in London resting. And I luckily pick my phone up and I look at Instagram and somebody from the crowd takes a picture of the stage going, getting ready for Paul Verzey. Can't wait. And I look and the agency or whatever got it wrong. And the show's at 7.
Oh my God.
And it's pouring raining out. So I put my pants on, my family, we get into this thing and I showed up like 18 minutes late and I think people are going to leave and there's no openers in London. So I'm like rained on and I'm going, oh my God. And these people like flew from Germany. So I literally got on stage at like 7:18 and I go, guys, and everyone's going nuts and happy. And they think it was like part of the show, like some anticipation. And I'm like, no, dude. So I just said, who was the guy who took a picture? And this like big German guy just goes, and I go, this show is happening because of you. I would have missed. I would have, if I literally closed my eyes and didn't look at my phone, I would have flown with my family to a sold out show in London. And it would have never happened because of a timing issue. So it ended up, it was the most stressful, but you know what? It was awesome. And then we did another one the next night. And, you know, it was amazing, but that was the one that made me say, this is pretty awesome.
Well, no, I think that's a good one to wrap on for sure. That's a near miss too. Paul, we could talk to you all day, man. But before we let you go, for our listeners at home, where can we tune in? Of course, you have the Verzey Effect. You also have co-host Anything Better with Bill Burr. Where can we get tickets for your show here in Toronto? Where can we find you online, follow your podcast, all that good stuff, man?
Yeah, thank you guys so much for having me, man. I could talk to you guys, got an Italian guy booking it. I mean, I'm going to be a little Italy. I mean, I can just, listen, here's the deal. You put me on a show with Italian kids, we could just talk because it'll move into food. It'll move into mafia movies. I'll be here all day, but.
Well, he just lives down the street from the Royal in Little Italy. So how are you?
I'm coming to your show.
He books the show. He just puts cannolis all over the sidewalk and he's around the corner with a butterfly net. That's how we book
it. I'll follow the cannolis. Bring some prosciutto, melon, and cheese, dude. We'll eat some bread backstage.
I'll get you a snooze so you don't sleep over and sleep in.
I host two podcasts, The Verzey Effect, which is now a full-on TV show in studio. For a long time, I did it here alone. A lot of people liked it alone, but now that I'm actually in a studio and I bring in guests, it's completely exploded, and I'm really excited about that. So you could check out The Verzey Effect on anywhere you get your podcast, iTunes, Spotify. I co-host the Anything Better podcast, another podcast with all things comedy. Bill Burr's my co-host, so we just talk a bunch with that. That's great. And yeah, man, I got a lot of tour dates at paulverzey.com. I'm going to be at the Royal Theater on January 28th. And you could get tickets for that at paulverzi.com. And then I have dates across every major city coming up all the way through the spring. And we constantly keep adding stuff. So I'll be there. If anybody listening to this is in New York City, February 2nd and 3rd, I'll be at Gotham Comedy Club, headline in New York City. And the special Nocturnal Admissions on Netflix, which I was so thrilled and humbled that it was globally trending. And I'm really proud of it. And it's doing well. So you guys can check that out. I'll sit here all day. you want plugs, you'll get plugs you never seen. No. If you do watch my Netflix special, though, everything I do at the Royal is not from there. So you're not going to see anything. That's one thing I'm not going to do to people. I'm not going to have people watch my Netflix thing and then come out and be like, oh, he did half of that.
There we go. Thank you so much, man. For our listeners at home, don't miss Paul Verzi live right here in Toronto at the Royal Theater, January 28th. Check out paulverzi.com. Stream that special.
Oh, wait, hold on. I just want to tell you guys a story about my father. So, no, I'm kidding. I'm kidding.
Okay. Stream that special. Check them out online. Watch the show. Listen to the podcast. And most importantly, for our listeners here in Toronto, just come see him live at Toronto's
January 28th.
January 28th, baby. paulverzi.com. That is our panel. Thank you so much to all of our panel, All Things New York Tonight, Paul Verzi, Matt Friend, thank you so much. That is our show. Don't forget, you can listen to all of our episodes right back to the beginning of time on Global News Online. We'll be back next week.
Hi, this is Alicia Carusi, and you're listening to my aunt, Sandra Carusi's Comedy RX.
This week's Comedy RX is brought to you by Paul Verzi.
My wife says I'm lazy and unprepared, and I'm not going to lie to you people. I'm lazy and unprepared. But see, my wife's part of the problem because she's overprepared. My wife is f-ing ready right now for anything right now. I'm not making this up. My wife is so prepared and ready. When she rides in a taxi cab, she rips one strand of hair out of her head, leaves it in the back seat in case the driver murders her. They could trace back the DNA to see who did it. Okay? That's who I'm living with, everybody. Look, the women out here are like, that's a good idea, though. That's... I gotta watch more Law and Order. That's...
Hi, it's Shauna, and I might be a bad parent because my kids think french fries are vegetables.
Hey, it's Ryan, and I might be a bad parent because I went out for wings when my wife was in the hospital after giving birth.
Johnny here. I might be a bad parent because in my house, the tooth fairy gives pocket change.
But we're not alone. Len emailed us and said his six-year-old daughter's Tarzan moment going from love seat to lazy boy by curtains made him more proud than any dance recital.
And Andy left his two-year-old at the rink.
All right, guys, I'm sure we're not alone, like Andy's kid.
For stories and confessions like this, make sure you check out our podcast.
It's called Bad Parents, and it's available wherever you get your podcasts.
I left a glove at the rink.